Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Reata Pharmaceuticals management call to discuss the CARDINAL phase II update. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star then zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, today's conference is being recorded. A PDF version of the presentation is available now on the webcast and on Reata's website at reatapharma.com in the Investor News section, where an audio recording of today's webcast will also be available shortly after the call today. Before the company proceeds with its remarks, please note the forward-looking statement disclosure in the company's press release. The company will be making forward-looking statements on today's call. There are many factors that could cause results to differ from expectations, including those noted in the company's SEC filings. Today's statements are not guarantees of future outcomes. Please also note that any comments made on today's call speak only as of today, April 12, 2018, and may no longer be accurate at the time of any webcast replay or transcript rereading. Following the prepared remarks, we will open the call up for questions. We ask that you please limit yourself to one question and one follow-up so that we may accommodate as many questions as possible. I would now like to turn the call over to Vinnie Jindal, Vice President of Strategy. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Reata's management call to discuss an update from the Phase 2 CARDINAL study of bardoxolone methyl in CKD caused by Alport syndrome. I'm joined this morning by our CEO, Warren Huff, and our Chief Medical Officer, Colin Meyer, and I'll turn the call over now to Warren.
Thanks, Vinny. As many of you know, bardoxolone has been studied in thousands of patients with chronic kidney disease stemming from diabetes, pulmonary hypertension, and Alport syndrome, and has consistently produced improvements in the kidney's filtration rate, or the so-called estimated glomerular filtration rate. We and our Japanese partner, Kaiwa Hako Kirin, have produced data demonstrating that the observed improvements in estimated GFR produced by bardoxolone reflect true improvements in GFR using the gold standard inulin clearance method, are sustained for up to 2 years, and reduce GFR decline events that have been validated to predict kidney failure. Most important, because it is an endpoint that will support approval in rare forms of CKD, the estimated GFR improvements produced by bardoxolone are partially retained after the drug is withdrawn, which provides compelling evidence that the drug is improving the structure and function of the kidney over time. Our Japanese partner, KHK, is following up after their successful Phase 2 Tsubaki study in diabetic CKD by initiating a pivotal Phase 3 trial in diabetic CKD set to launch in Japan later this year. We are applying our deep understanding of bardoxolone's effect in CKD to rare forms of CKD, beginning with Alport syndrome, where the pivotal portion of our CARDINAL study is ongoing. In our Phase 2 Phoenix trial, we're studying bardoxolone in four additional rare forms of CKD that collectively represent at least 500,000 patients in the United States. Turning to the CARDINAL Phase 2 study, as many of you know, last year we reported data from the Phase 2 portion of CARDINAL demonstrating that the drug produced large, significant improvements in estimated GFR from baseline after 12 weeks of treatment in Alport syndrome patients. We're continuing to follow these patients, and the data we announced yesterday afternoon demonstrated that they're maintaining the observed improvement in kidney function through at least 9 months. We expect that these data will mature in line with our previous studies and be maintained through at least 1 year. I'll now turn the call over to Colin for a more in-depth review of the 9-month data.
Thanks, Warren. We are pleased to report that data from the Phase 2 portion of CARDINAL are complete through week 36, and improvements in kidney function are maintained through that point in time. Recall that the Phase 2 portion of the trial enrolled 30 patients with eGFR values between 30 to 90 mL per minute who are receiving standard of care. Patients are treated for 48 weeks, followed by a 4-week withdrawal period. At week 52, patients are then restarted on drug and receive another 48 weeks of treatment, followed by another 4-week withdrawal period. A titration scheme was used to reach a goal dose of 20 or 30 milligrams given orally once daily, and this was effective at avoiding bardoxolone-related discontinuations. Overall, there has been a high patient retention rate, with 90% of patients remaining on study and who will be included in the week 52 withdrawal analysis. No discontinuations were due to bardoxolone-related adverse events. Just as important, initial increases in estimated GFR that were observed through week 12 are durable through week 36. The treatment effect is consistent with low variability and a very low p-value. There is no statistical difference between the eGFR change at week 12 and the change at week 36 if all 30 patients or just the 27 who are still on study are analyzed. The main reason for this slight numerical decrease is that there were a few outliers at week 12 who drove up the average. While the mean change at week 12 was 13.4 mL per minute, the median was 11.7 mL per minute. The data do not suggest any meaningful loss of effect, and based on data from our prior studies, we anticipate that the week 36 eGFR values will be stable through week 48. While the phase 2 portion of the trial is open label and did not include a placebo group, since initiation of the trial, natural history data from an observational study has characterized the rate of eGFR loss in patients with Alport syndrome. These data were generated by several of our key investigators and reported at the ASN meeting in late 2016. In patients with similar baseline characteristics to those being studied in CARDINAL, who were receiving standard of care ACE inhibitors and or ARBs, the mean loss of eGFR by week 48 was approximately 4 mL per minute in patients with Alport syndrome. We anticipate a similar loss in the placebo group of the phase 3 portion of CARDINAL. We previously reported initial increases in the urinary albumin to creatinine ratio, a measure of proteinuria, through week 12. Once CKD patients have established proteinuria due to their disease process, any agent that affects GFR or filtration will affect proteinuria. The initial increases we observe by week 12 are due to increased filtration of protein from the blood, since bardoxolone increases the kidney's filtration rate. Consistent with prior studies in diabetic CKD, the albumin-creatinine ratio levels have stabilized and are numerically reduced at week 36 versus week 12. To determine if the increases in ACR can be accounted for by the increases in eGFR, we have computed the log ACR to eGFR ratio. As you can see, the ratio is unchanged from baseline. These data are consistent with bardoxolone's mechanism of action of increasing kidney function by increasing surface area for filtration. Importantly, these data are very distinct from agents that transiently increase kidney function by increasing pressure in the kidney, which is known as hyperfiltration. As seen with amlodipine, this pattern is associated with an initial increase in proteinuria, followed by further increases over time, loss of eGFR after an initial, much smaller increase by week 12, and a log ACR to eGFR ratio that is meaningfully increased. We therefore think these new data in Alport syndrome patients are very helpful to differentiate the clinical profile of bardoxolone from agents that cause deleterious hyperfiltration. From a safety perspective, there have been no new safety findings, and the data are consistent with prior trials. Adverse events to date have generally been mild to moderate in intensity, and this is in part has resulted in the high patient retention rate of 90%. There have been no drug-related serious adverse events. As previously seen, the most commonly reported adverse event is muscle spasms. These have generally been transient and are associated with reductions in creatine kinase, which is a marker of muscle injury. Since the levels of CK have decreased, there is no evidence that muscle cramps are a sign of muscle toxicity, and they are likely due to the metabolic effects of bardoxolone. All other adverse events have been infrequent. With that, I'll transition the discussion back to Benny.
Thanks, Colin. Several important updates from our CKD program are expected this year, including announcement of the results from a retained benefit analysis from the phase 2 of CARDINAL in the third quarter of this year. In addition, our PHOENIX study of bardoxolone in rare forms of CKD, autosomal dominant polycystic kidney disease, IgA nephropathy, CKD caused by type 1 diabetes, and FSGS, is continuing to enroll, and we expect to announce 12-week on-treatment data from at least one cohort of PHOENIX in the second half of this year. In Japan, our development partner KHK will also commence a pivotal trial in diabetic CKD this year. With that, we'd like to open up the call to questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question at this time, please press the star and then the number one key on your telephone keypad. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. In the interest of time, we ask that you please limit yourself to one question and one follow-up. And to prevent any background noise, we ask that you please place your line on mute once your question has been stated. Thank you. And our first question comes from the line of Adam Walsh with Stifel. Your line is open.
Great. Good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my question, and thanks for the update. My first question is on the EGFR. Can you speak to the trend that you're seeing, Colin? I know you had said that there is no statistical difference, but there is a slight numerical difference. If we were to kind of plot out week by week, the dot plot, is it trending downward or is it just kind of bouncing around? That's my first question.
Yeah, Adam, we think it's probably just bouncing around. Once again, statistically, there's no difference. You know, with 27 to 30 patients, you know, there is some variation. And so overall, it seems stable. If you refer to the data from the Beam and Beacon trial, it was also stable, perhaps you know, slightly down after week 12, but importantly, parallel to placebo. A major difference between diabetic CKD and Alport syndrome is the rate you know, of decline you know, in the patient population. And so in our Beam and Beacon trials, placebo patients lost 1 mL/min after 1 year of study. And as I mentioned, in the natural history study in Alport syndrome patients, the loss was 4. And so we anticipate you know, a much you know, faster rate of progression you know, in the placebo patients. But overall, we believe the data show that bardoxolone stably increases GFR in these patients.
That's helpful. And then my one follow-up is, now that you have seen out to 36 weeks data that suggests that you can increase and maintain EGFR and Alport syndrome, that's obviously a different underlying pathophysiology than the prior Beam and Beacon studies in diabetic CKD. Are you gaining more confidence now that the drug may potentially work across multiple different orphan CKD indications where maybe the pathophysiology underlying the CKD is different? How much confidence do these data give you as we look toward the Phoenix data?
Yeah, so I'll say that we've always been very confident, but we think this you know, data you know, from patients really helps to demonstrate that the effect that we saw in diabetic CKD is relevant to other forms of CKD. And of course, we do have more data than just diabetic CKD. We made the initial observations of improved kidney function in cancer patients who had impaired kidney function because of damage from chemotherapy or chronic hypertension. And as you know, a few months ago, we released data from our PH program demonstrating that improvements in kidney function caused by primarily patients underlying pulmonary hypertension and autoimmune disease was durable for 2 years. And so I think we think not only the clinical data, but the vast amount of preclinical data that we have demonstrate that the mechanism is relevant. And I think importantly, what this data also tells us, the Alport syndrome data, is that the week 12 change in EGFR is likely to be highly predictive of the change you know, at you know, 1 year.
Yeah, Adam, this is Warren Huff. I just add that these are very different looking patients too. I mean, in the diabetic population, you know, you're talking about much older patients, 50 to 70 years old with decades of, you know, systemic hyperglycemia from their diabetes with, you know, many comorbidities. And, you know, many of these patients are, you know, young men in their teens and 20s. With really a genetic defect in their GBM and really no other real health issues. And so they're really at completely different ends of the CKD spectrum, and it's active in both sets of patients.
That's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Maury Raycroft with Jefferies. Your line is open.
Hi, congratulations on the update. This is Vesna on for Maury. I have one question and one follow-up. First question would be, can you remind us what do you expect to see for the retained benefit analysis? What do you need to show so the data looks promising? And what is the read-through for the phase 3 data? Thanks.
Thank you. It's an excellent question. And so the trial is powered, the phase 3 portion, to detect a 2.2 mL per minute off-treatment effect versus placebo. And so now we have, I think, much more information than we had when we started the trial. First, obviously, we see that the effect on increasing GFR is durable through week 36. That had been an outstanding question. Would the changes at week 12 be durable longer term? And so we are observing that. There's still a double-digit increase, and based upon our prior trials, we would estimate that the change at week 48 would be very similar to the change at week 36. We've modeled a 30 to 40% retained benefit for the active treated patients, meaning that we would expect that 30 to 40% of the approximate 11 mL per minute increase would be retained post-withdrawal. And as I mentioned earlier, I think we now have some helpful information to understand how placebo patients are likely to behave. In our initial modeling, we were very conservative. So in the design of the trial, we assumed that placebo patients would have very minimal loss. Based upon data from this natural history trial that I mentioned, we now expect that those patients will lose approximately 4 mL per minute. Since our patients were enrolled basically by the same investigators and have similar baseline characteristics. And so we would expect an increase off drug of 3 to 4 to 5 mL per minute, a placebo from baseline, a placebo loss of 4. And so we would estimate a 7 to 9 mL per minute placebo corrected week 52 change. And once again, the trial is powered to show a 2.2 mL per minute off-treatment difference. And so we believe there's a lot of conservatism built into the design because of that.
Great. Thank you. That's very helpful. And the follow-up question would be on Phoenix. So you mentioned that we're expecting to see the first data in second half of 18. It'll be likely a 12-week data. Can you give us some additional granularity on where, which venue could we see this data, and which indication is most likely to read out first? Thank you so much.
Yeah, at this time we can't comment on the specific venue or timing as to when the data will be available. And as far as which of the four groups, all that we can really say is that if you estimate the number of patients that exist in the U.S. who had the four various forms, that's likely what we would guess would be the timing of the readout. So there's more PKD patients and IgA patients than there are FSGS patients, and so.
Thank you.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Joseph Schwartz with Leerink Partners. Your line is open.
Thanks very much, and congrats as well. I was just hoping to clarify a couple things. I know that you mentioned that you observed in the natural history studies around a 4 mil per min decrease over time, and then here you're reporting changes from baseline for bardoxolone of 11.3. Are these just absolute changes that are not placebo-corrected? If so, what is the placebo change here? That would be helpful just to fully understand. Thanks.
Yes, recall that, Joe, that the phase 2 portion of Cardinal is open label. There's no placebo, and so the 11 mL per minute increase is from baseline. Once again, the phase 3 portion of the trial is placebo controlled. 150 patients are being randomized evenly to drug or placebo. And we would estimate that the likely placebo loss would be around 4 mL per minute, which is similar to what was seen in the natural history study. And so if we had to estimate the effect at week 48, we would estimate that the bardoxolone patients would likely be up around 11 mL per minute, and the placebo patients would be down 4. And once again, to estimate the retained benefit, the placebo patients will still be down 4. There should be no change in their eGFR or minimal change from week 48 to 52. And we would estimate that 30 to 40% of the bardoxolone effect would be retained, and so, which is how we come to an estimated retained benefit of 7 to 9 mL per minute.
Okay. And That's helpful. Thanks. And then does this data that we're seeing today at 36 weeks diverge at all from what you've assumed going into the trial in terms of what you would see at 36 weeks relative to what you're actually seeing now?
It's very consistent. And so once again, statistically, there's no difference between what we saw at week 12 and 36. And we reported the confidence intervals at the week 12 data for this very reason, because we knew that there was likely going to be a slight difference in the point estimate.
It's virtually identical to the diabetic CKD study beam curves that pop up at week 12, come up maybe slightly 1 mL/min, and then are just maintained, for the year.
Okay, great. And then my last question would just be on the proteinuria. You mentioned that the initial increases there have stabilized, so I was just wondering if you could characterize that any further.
Well, the data are in the presentation, and so once again, if patients have established proteinuria and they already have a defective filtration barrier, any agent that affects GFR by increasing it or reducing it will concomitantly either increase or reduce proteinuria independent of the mechanism of change in GFR. And so we would expect, once again, that since bardoxolone increases GFR, that there would be an initial increase in proteinuria. The second question is, well, is the longer-term effect good or bad? And what we've shown is that ACR is no longer increasing. It's stabilized and appears to be slightly reduced at week 36 versus week 12. This is, once again, consistent with what we saw in diabetic CKD. It's consistent with our hypothesized mechanism based upon preclinical data of the drug increasing surface area. And importantly, it's very different than a mechanism of increased pressure, also known as hyperfiltration, which would be associated with much larger increases of proteinuria that would continue to increase while the GFR effect would be lost after initial small increase. And so to us, this has been helpful. This information was shared with our investigators within the past week, and they also thought that this was really helpful to characterize the longer-term effects of the drug and that it's very different than what we'd expect with the mechanism of hyperfiltration.
Great. Thanks for taking my questions.
You're welcome.
Thank you. And as a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question at this time, please press the star and then the number one key on your telephone keypad. Once again, that is star one for questions. And our next question comes from the line of Matt Kaplan with Ladenburg Thalmann. Your line is open.
Hi. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, so congrats again on the durable results. I guess it's gratifying to see the durability maintained in this indication as well as others now. Just want to dive in a little bit more into the safety of the product that you're observing so far now that patients are out this long. How does this compare to, I guess, the BEAM and BEACON studies, and are you seeing any evidence of fluid overload as you had, seen in those studies?
So it's an excellent question, and I would say that the tolerability profile is very similar to what we saw in the BEAM trial. There were some early adverse events, and then patients generally did very well. In the BEACON trial, as you know, we studied very sick, late-stage patients who had, on average, a 20-year history of diabetes, who were on the verge of going on dialysis. And in a very small identifiable subset, there was a risk of acute fluid retention that required IV diuresis. And so we, as well as our partner, Kyowa Kirin, have been using a risk mitigation strategy to actively exclude patients who are at risk of fluid retention and then carefully follow them during the risk window, which was the first month. And so both of us have been able to successfully avoid the risk of fluid retention. They reported their phase II data at ASN, and so blood pressure was stable, no signs of fluid retention from urine output analyses. In our trial, we have not seen that as well. Of course, we're actively avoiding those patients. We're not studying late-stage patients, and these patients generally do not have cardiovascular comorbidities. And so blood pressure has been stable, BNPs have been stable and well under the upper limit of normal, and there have been no concerns by the Data Safety Monitoring Board. So from our perspective, this is, trial is going like we hoped and expected it would, without any obvious meaningful adverse events associated with improvement in kidney function, which we've now shown is durable for 9 months.
Okay, that's helpful. And any differences in the response with respect to dose that you're seeing in the study?
Yeah, so it's actually a really good question. And so we titrated bardoxolone in the BEAM trial, you know, many years ago, and then we switched to a fixed dose for a Beacon of 20 milligrams given orally once daily. But upon analyzing the data, we noted that some patients needed a little bit more drug to have a durable response. And so for that reason, we're titrating up to 30 milligrams in patients who have higher proteinuria at baseline. And obviously, proteinuria is an indicator of damage to the kidney, and so you'd expect that those patients potentially, you know, would be harder to affect and would have more inflammation. And so we've been pleased thus far with the response across the board in the Alport syndrome trial. We haven't disclosed the individual changes in those subgroups, but we're very happy with what we've been seeing.
Okay, that's helpful. And then last question. How many patients, Alport patients, are in the historical database? And give us a sense on how robust that 4 milliliter change is in terms of the expectation.
So the natural history trial that I referenced had about 75 patients at 1 year. And so that's, you know, about actually the same number as the number of placebo patients that we're rolling in our phase three. That's just, you know, one of several. It's the most recent. It's very contemporary. There are other published papers from groups in Europe and elsewhere who have also published similar results. And so this is just very recent evidence that we think is consistent with prior data that help us to really understand how they're likely to perform in the phase three.
Great. Thanks a lot for taking questions.
You're welcome.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Yigal Nochomovitz with Citigroup. Your line is open.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking the questions. Colin, could you comment on the range of effect? I think you mentioned the mean eGFR benefit was around 11 mils per minute, but do you have any data on the best performer and worst performer to get a sense of the range? And also, the mean that you're reporting, does that include all patients, or is that the 27 that remain on study? And if you could comment briefly on the reason there were the three patients that stopped the study. Thank you.
Yeah, that's the 27 patients who remain on study, and we'll have data in actual week 52 values. We won't impute missing week 52 values for the week 52 analysis. And so the three patients who discontinued, one discontinued because they withdrew consent because of the burden of the study visits that occurred around week 12. That patient actually had an increase in GFR that was above the average at that point in time. Another patient was referred to one of our sites and was unstable on their background meds, required optimization. They had hyperkalemia because their ACE inhibitor, and their ACE inhibitor dose had to be changed, which is not allowed per the protocol since it's standard of care. And so that patient was removed from the trial. Then a third patient went overseas for approximately 6 weeks and did not bring study drug, and so was non-compliant. And so none of those were related to bardoxolone adverse events. And overall, we feel that a 90% on-treatment compliance rate is extremely high for any trial. And then to answer your first question about the range, so obviously, you know, there is variability. While it's been low, some patients have, of course, done above the average, and some have basically had, you know, modest increases. And so we've seen increases of, you know, 20, 25 mil per minute, and we've seen some patients have increases of just a few. Importantly, you know, they generally remain stable from weeks 12 to 36.
I think we previously made public the individual change from baseline for every patient in the study, and we basically don't see any change, real significant change from that.
Got it. Thanks. If you wouldn't mind, if I just quickly ask a question on the Catalyst study, I understand you're coming up to the decision point where you may or may not resize the study. Could you just remind us what the triggers are to do that analysis, and whether you have a view at this point as to the likelihood of resizing the study higher? Thank you.
Sure, no problem, Yigal. And so that analysis has not been done. You know, it's a pre-specified analysis done on a blinded and pooled basis of the data. And so as we've been discussing publicly, you know, we will do that, you know, by the end of this quarter. But we don't have a read right now because the analysis has not been done. And the primary factors that will be assessed are variability, as well as baseline patient characteristics and distribution of patients enrolled.
Was there a number of patients that had to be enrolled that would be the clearing event to allow you to do that analysis, or am I remembering that incorrectly?
Yeah, there had to be at least 100.
Okay.
Data from at least 100. Yeah. Okay. And you'll recall this was all pre-specified and built in because we had performed the phase two work all in the United States, and to enroll the phase three study, we had to add a significant number of offshore sites, and we had a concern that we would simply see higher variability in the offshore sites, and built this in just to preserve the statistical power of the study.
Got it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, and I'm showing no further questions at this time. I would now like to turn the call back to Vinnie Jindal for closing remarks.
Thank you so much, and thanks to everyone for dialing in today. We look forward to speaking with you again soon.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for participating in today's conference. A downloadable PDF of today's presentation and an audio recording will be available shortly after this conference call on Reata's website at reatapharma.com in the Investor News section. This concludes the program. You may all disconnect. Everyone have a great day.